That was named Graham.
Where to begin? It's this workshop. First of all, let me tell you about how I got here today. Coming to this retreat. This retreat's really special to me, first of all, because my first week clean, I was here. This is my first retreat. It was the first time I got to experience a clean time countdown. They gave me a basic text. This actually isn't it because I had already bought one. And then last year, I gave my first lead at a workshop on step one. Coming up here this year, I had some expectations that it was going to be just as great as it always is, you know. And I had this relationship that I had been in for the last couple months. Just Thursday, she went to jail for using. So then all of a sudden, this retreat became more necessary for me to get out here and get away, clear my thoughts, and put my program into action and use the tools that I have available to me. I didn't have any commitment out here this time. I wasn't asked to speak or anything, but after doing what I had to do, for me, walking around and talking to every addict, if you're a guy, and if I haven't beat your ear for 20 minutes about this relationship struggle, talk to me after the meeting, and I will. I've been doing what I had to do and, seeking solutions up in here, somebody suggested that I come and volunteer to speak. When I went to do that, I took this direction, and I went to the registration table, and I asked them if they had any slots available. And the first two things they had were steps I hadn't worked yet, and I said, well, I can't do that. And I was just thinking, well, it's time to turn around and go back to the cabin, you know. And they flipped the page over and said, how about, what can I do? And that sounds like a higher power to me working when I couldn't do it myself, because that's what I need to look at. Happens to be one of my favorite chapters in the basic text. My experience, I just recently celebrated 2 years clean, and I definitely don't have all the answers. So what I can do is I can go to the basic text and get some experience, strength, and hope from there and, incorporate some of my story and how it works in my life. Because this book was written, you know, about addicts, by addicts, for addicts. And I definitely qualify because I believe I'm an addict today. I was kind of reading this today, being that it's one of my favorite chapters. I was seeing all the solutions to all my problems in here. I was trying to highlight some things that I wanted to touch on. And I almost highlighted the whole chapter. But there's so many solutions in this chapter. In this book also, it doesn't have a whole lot of must statements and necessary statements. There's a lot of, it's a good idea and stuff like that. But in this chapter particularly, I found a few just going through and I marked them. And there's a lot of stuff that if I want to stay clean, if I want to get clean and stay clean and live a better life, there's some things that I have to do. It kind of starts with, what am I willing to do for my recovery today? And this chapter is after they tell me why, who I am and what this is and why I'm here and how this works. Now it's time to talk about what I can do. I'm going to go straight to the literature because this is where the truth is, you know. Begin your own program by taking step one from the previous chapter, how it works. When we fully concede to our innermost selves that we are powerless over our addiction, we have taken a big step in our recovery. That's talking about my surrender. That's talking about whenever I realized that I can't keep living a double life. I can't do this my way. And I had to find that out on my own. You could tell me that 1,000 times, and I wasn't going to hear it until I was ready. My clean date is technically the day after I, feel like I surrendered. Many of us have had some reservations at this point, so give yourself a break and be as thorough as possible from the start. It was about time for me to give myself a break, because I was beating myself up with drugs and with bad decisions it wasn't getting me anywhere for too long, I knew that there was some hope in this place because I saw other people staying clean and living clean and having pretty decent lives and loving life, And so as you go on to step two and so forth, and as you go on, you will come to an understanding of the program for yourself. If you're in an institution of any kind and have stopped using for the present, you can with a clear mind try this way of life. And also, if you're not in an institution, the same holds true. Stop using today. Most of us can do for 8 or 12 hours what seems impossible for a longer period of time. If the obsession or compulsion becomes too great, put yourself on a 5-minute basis of not using. Minutes will grow to hours and hours to days, so you will break the habit and gain some peace of mind. The real miracle happens when you realize that the need for drugs has in some way been lifted from you. You've stopped using and started to live. There was really like, there was no greater moment than whenever I understood that like it's been a long time since I've obsessed about using. I didn't know the minute that the obsession was lifted, but I could tell that like something was starting to change through the steps, through coming to meetings, through talking to my sponsor, through working on some stuff. You know, it didn't just come by osmosis or nothing. Like there was just a time that I realized that I really don't have that drive to go use drugs anymore. And that was a really great beginning. You know, that was a really, really great beginning. And it totally wasn't, it wasn't a total solve to my problem, because I'm a quick forgetter and that stuff will go away real quick, you know. And I could easily let my thinking get the best of me, and I could go right back out, you know. So I got to be vigilant, and I got to continue to stay here. And it talks about things that we can do. The first step to recovery is to stop using. We cannot expect the program to work for us if our minds and bodies are still clouded by drugs. It talks about developing the concept of God as we understand Him is a project that we can undertake. That was a hard concept for me. I had to look to the as we understand Him. That's of my understanding. A God of my understanding is something that I still work on. And I found something that seems to work. And the more that I use it, the better my attitude improves. You know, the better my outlook on life and my optimism, my hope improves, you know. It says we can also use the steps to improve our attitudes. And that, you know, my concept of a higher power is something that comes through using the steps. Our disease involved much more than just using drugs, so our recovery must involve much more than simple abstinence. Recovery is an active change in our ideas and attitudes. You know, simple abstinence wasn't enough, because going back to where it says here, some of us can stop using for a short period of time, 8 or 12 hours. I could do 5 or 6 days. You know, I couldn't stay clean long enough to decide that it was a better idea to always stay clean. You know, I couldn't do it. Like, I would stay clean until I peed in the cup, and then I would go use. Or I would stay clean until somebody was off my back, and I would go use. You know, and I would end up having that vicious cycle all over again, you know. It says the ability to face problems is necessary to stay clean. And that's something I have to practice, because, like, right now, like I said, I'm going through this problem. The girl I've been with has used and has lied and is now incarcerated. And that's a problem to me. That's one of the biggest problems that I've had to face. And, you know, it's really funny, too, because, like, I come up here and somebody, one of these people that I was walking around talking to told me that their picker was broke when it came to relationships, you know. And, that's so true, but it seems like whenever a higher power takes over, my picker works, because every workshop that I've come to at this retreat this weekend, the speaker has talked about relationship experience, like exactly what I needed to hear, exactly up my alley. I mean, every single one, from, you know, step 1, step 4, step 8, the main speaker, there was a couple others, like relapse and recovery, you know. Yeah, and I'm soaking up all this information like a sponge to the best that I can, you know, because I need to use this stuff. I need to put it into action. Guilt and worry can keep us from living in the here and now. I feel that today. You know, I'm feeling that today. Denial of our disease and other reservations keep us sick. And I can admit today that I have reservations about the relationship. I don't have reservations to use drugs, but I have reservations that I want to hold on to this relationship and I want to endure some more pain. I can't deny that, because it's evident. I mean, you can see it on my face. If you talk to me, you know where I'm at, you know. We could be suffering from an overly sensitive ego. Some of the most common excuses for using are loneliness, self-pity, and fear. That's funny. At the last speaker I heard, I was just sitting there thinking about how big my ego and how big my fear are. And there's not enough room, you know, for all that ego and all that fear. It's just, there's a lot of insanity that can bounce around just from feelings. Dishonesty, closed-mindedness, and unwillingness are three of our greatest enemies. Self-obsession is the core of our disease. You know, I was a liar. I can still do it, but I was always a liar. I was always closed-minded, and I was always unwilling. Once I started to see what recovery really has to offer me, you know, the daily reprieve from active addiction was a start, and like, there's so much more to gain from working a thorough program. Because my life today is good. I'm sitting in some negative feelings, but my life today is actually good. And I know that using, it's always an option, but it's not where I want to go today. We've learned that old ideas and old ways won't help us to stay clean and live a better life. One of the problems is that we found it easier to change our perception of reality than to change reality. We must give up this old concept and face the fact that reality and life do go on, whether we choose to accept them or not. We can only change the way we react and the way we see ourselves. This is necessary for us to accept that change is gradual and recovery is an ongoing process. Enough said. A meeting a day for the first 90 days of recovery is a good idea. I remember whenever I was first getting clean, I share this story a lot, but I thought I was doing 90 meetings in 90 days, because that's always what I hear, 90 and 90, 90 and 90, 90 and 90, and that's the experience I got, you know, that's the suggestion that I got and I was trying to take, but it was football season, you know, and on Sundays, like, I was watching the Steelers, I wasn't going to a meeting, and but I was making up for it, right, because I was going to two meetings on Friday, or I was going to two meetings on Wednesday, or whatever day, and I was sitting there in a meeting, and I was talking to somebody sitting beside me, and I said, yeah, man, like, coming up this week, I'm going to have my 90 and 90 done. He said, where were you Sunday? I said, watching the Steelers. And he had to take me to literature and tell me, it doesn't say 90 meetings in 90 days. It says a meeting a day for the first 90 days of recovery. And I looked at that, and that's where I first realized that, like, literature is the truth, you know. What I hear and what is real aren't always the same thing. I finally ended up completing a meeting a day for 90 days, and it took me almost 2 years to finally do it, but I actually finally did do it. There's a special feeling for addicts when they discover that there are other people who share their difficulties past and present. And that's what I found whenever I beat a lot of meetings, and I heard a lot of leads, and I just kept coming and sticking around and talking to people before and after the meeting, you know, and I would find out that these people were more like me than I would believe at first. You know, these people were just like me and are trying to do the same thing. You know, we all have a common bond. It says, meetings strengthen our recovery. Meetings keep us in touch with where we've been, but more importantly, with where we could go in our recovery. As we go to meetings regularly, we learn the value of talking with other addicts who share our problems and goals. We have to open up and accept the love and understanding that we need in order to change. When we become acquainted with the fellowship and its principles and begin to put them into action, we start to grow. We apply effort to our most obvious problems and let go of the rest. We do the job at hand, and as we progress, new opportunities for improvement present themselves. You know, I started this program, I sold myself short at the beginning. You know, I wanted to get off probation. I wanted to be a free man. I wanted to be able to walk free and not be on paper so I could make my own choices. And, like, that's all I really wanted, you know. Throughout this process, I've been let off probation, and by the time I got there, I realized that I want so much more. You know, I burnt my fourth step yesterday, and before I did, I read on it, like, some of the things that I want out of recovery, and it's funny, like, a year later, I've achieved everything that was on there that I wanted out of my recovery, you know, and the only thing that was still left on there was I wanted to quit drinking caffeine, and for a period of time, I did, and I went back to it. And at the time I wrote the fourth step, I had quit smoking, but I went back to that. But all this other stuff, like, there was a long list of stuff that I wanted, and, like, I continually, like, I'm still meeting and exceeding that expectation I had of myself. And that's, like, the growth in here is incredible whenever I really apply this stuff. It says, our new friends in the fellowship will help us. Because, of course, I mean, I can't do it alone, and, you know, I had to start building a support group in the beginning, and, like, they tell me as a newcomer to stay away from other newcomers, but, you know, in the town I was in, there was a lot of newcomers and only a few people with time. But, I mean, I got to accept some of the people with time, and, like, some of us newcomers actually did stay together and stay clean for a period of time. Yeah, some of us had our relapses, and some of us completely left for good, but, you know, there's a couple of us that really wanted it that did stay clean. It says, gradually, we replace old habits with new ways of living. Gradually. We become willing to change. We go to meetings regularly, get and use telephone numbers, read literature, and most importantly, we don't use. This is what I can do. This is what I can do. And none of this stuff requires a college degree. None of this stuff, you know, it's not rocket science. It's stuff I can do. I can show up at meetings. You know, I can read some literature. I can not use. I mean, I can call people. That stuff, I mean, if the dope man had the dope and I had his phone number, I was calling him until he answered. You know, one way or another, whether it's tomorrow, and him calling until he answers. We learn to share with others. If we don't tell someone we're hurting, they will seldom see it. That's something I can forget too, you know. Sometimes I want to keep my pain. I don't want to share it with you. You know, I don't want to bring you down because I'm in a bad mood. But you know what? Whenever the pain gets great enough, I will change that. And like this weekend proves that to me because I've walked around talking to a lot of people, man, just sharing my pain. But when we reach out for help, we can receive it. And I've been getting some help. Another tool for the newcomer, involvement with the fellowship. We begin by asking for help and trying out the recommendations of people at the meetings. It is beneficial to allow others in the group to help us. In time, we will be able to pass on what we have been given. We learn that service to others will get us out of ourselves. That's exactly why I'm sitting here right now, you know. Somebody told me, suggested to me that, you know, I go volunteer to do this, and it's exactly what I had to do, you know. And I knew it as soon as I heard it because I've heard it before, you know, help someone else. Get out of yourself, and that's it, too, because, like, I walk around here in my own head, and I'm in the worst place I could possibly be. It talks about service work. I mean, simple stuff. If I'm new, I can do all these things. Emptying ashtrays, making coffee, cleaning up, setting up for a meeting, opening the door, chairing a meeting, and passing out the literature. And I would like to add in there hugging somebody, too. You know, I've hugged a lot of people here. I need to do that for me. We found it helpful to have a sponsor and use this sponsor. Sponsorship's a two-way street. It helps both the newcomer and the sponsor. Sponsorship, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, is implied and informal in its approach, but is the heart of the NA way of recovery from addiction, one addict helping another. Without a sponsor, I would be sponsoring myself, and I'd be sponsoring the fool. And I've luckily had sponsors that have guided me where I need to go. You know, I've had to ask for it, and they don't do it for me. They don't work my program for me. But whenever I need to know some experience and how to work through these steps, that's what my sponsor's there for, to guide me. And I have to use it, you know, because I, even if I have this book, even if I go to a lot of meetings, I really can't do the step work that I need without a sponsor, because it's just something I could cheat, you know, and I could cheat and I could lie and I'd be lying to myself if I thought I could do it without a sponsor. Our experience reveals that working the steps is our best guarantee against relapse. Our sponsors and friends can advise us on how to work the steps. We can talk over what the steps mean. They can help us to prepare for the spiritual experience of living the steps. Asking God, as we understand Him, for help improves our understanding of the steps. Here's another must. When we are prepared, we must try out our newly found way of life. I can't just do it and be done. I got to try it out, too. I have to live it. You know, I can't write it and be done. I mean, I have to apply this stuff. We must learn to adapt our life to the program. Well, I skipped the line. We learn that the program won't work when we try to adapt it to our life. We must learn to adapt our life to the program. Today we seek solutions, not problems. We keep what we need and leave the rest. We find that by working the steps, communicating with our higher power, talking to our sponsors, and sharing with newcomers, we are able to grow spiritually. The 12 steps are used as a program of recovery. And this is what I can do for me, is the steps. The steps are going to save my life. You know, the steps are going to change my life. The steps are going to give me a new life that I didn't really think that was out there for me. You know, I was not a spiritual person. I was an ego-driven, prideful person, thought that I had all the answers and I could do my life my way, even though the results always ended up me being back in jail, back in a rehab, lying to somebody, stealing money, in debt, failing out of school. That's where my self took myself, you know. And the 12 steps I never thought would work for me until I was ready to try. If we honestly try to do God's will to the best of our ability, we can handle anything that happens. Anything. I mean, that jumps out at me right now, you know, because if I'm trying to do Graham's will, I'm going to get Graham results. Plain and simple. And I can't handle anything. I can't handle anything on my own. I can't. You know, I run. I'm a runner. I avoid controversy. I avoid pain. I'll run, and eventually I'll use. Sharing with fellow addicts is a basic tool in our program. This help can only come from another addict. For anyone who wants our way of life, we share experience, strength, and hope instead of preaching and judging. If sharing the experience of our pain helps just one person, it was worth the suffering. We strengthen our own recovery when we share it with others who ask for help. If we keep what we have to share, we lose it. Words mean nothing until we put them into action. We recognize our spiritual growth when we're able to reach out and help others. We help others when we participate in service work and try to carry the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. We learn that we keep what we have only by giving it away. Also, our experience shows that many personal problems are resolved when we get out of ourselves and offer to help those in need. We recognize that one addict can best understand and help another addict. And I'm not telling this to any of you. I'm telling this to myself. You know, the basic text is here for me. What can I do? I should be asking you guys this question. You know what I mean? Because I don't have the answers. That's why I have to go to the literature with this one. Because I don't always know what to do. Even though I've been taught what to do, I don't always have that answer, you know. And it's in here. I'm almost to the end of this chapter, so I guess I'm almost done. Experience shows clearly that those who get the most out of Narcotics Anonymous program are those to whom sponsorship is important. And to me, sponsorship is important. I've had friends of mine go for periods of time resenting their sponsor. I've had friends of mine going for periods of time without a sponsor. And I can see the turmoil, man. And I had a point, my first sponsor, I had a point in my recovery where I could see that I was, I don't know how to say this without sounding egotistical, but I was catching him. You know, I was catching up to his level. And frankly, I was afraid I was going to, like, pass him spiritually, you know. And I was working on stuff, and he wasn't working on as much stuff. And I was on the upward climb, and he was on the downward climb. And I was catching him in the step work, and I was going to way more meetings than he was. And, I was connected to a lot more people than he was. And I outgrew that relationship, and I had to change. And I wasn't about to go without a sponsor, so I reassessed my situation, and I found out, like, where would I be with a different sponsor, and I tried to, like, recruit a new sponsor, and, like, I had it narrowed down to, like, two people, and I ended up, like, one night, I called PJ, and he wouldn't give me any advice on sponsorship. He wouldn't do it. He said, you know, you just need to have one. He's like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, you know, and I ended up picking somebody that wasn't one of the two that I had selected, and looking back on it today, I made the right choice, because now the two that I had selected, I would not want as my sponsor. One of them actually ended up using. But I definitely need my sponsor. The sponsor I have now, like, we do cool sponsorship family stuff, you know, occasionally. I work steps with my sponsor. He's become not a friend, but definitely a mentor. I call on him, and I dump everything I need to on him. He's really good about calling me back if I miss him. He calls me for help, too, because it did say sponsorship is a two-way street. And, he calls me for stuff, which I end up needing that same solution that I gave him, and I'll call him for stuff and end up, you know, it works back and forth, and it's crazy how that works. But, like, I do love my sponsor today. Working with others is only the beginning of service work. NA service allows us to spend much of our time directly helping suffering addicts, as well as ensuring that the Narcotics Anonymous itself survives. This way we keep what we have by giving it away. And I've already said it, man. That's why I'm here, because what I've learned in my recovery is that I need to give it back, you know, and especially times like these, whenever I'm struggling, you know, I'm in my own head over something, and like yesterday, the feeling that if I wasn't here, I could be out there using was really real to me, and by doing what I can do, by talking to a whole bunch of other fellow addicts until I'm blue in the face and sick of talking, asking for solutions, being willing to accept the help, doing a little bit of service, giving it back, that's the only way I'm going to keep it, you know. And I'm really grateful for this retreat. I'm really grateful for this fellowship. You guys have kept me clean. You guys have kept me clean for 2 years and 11 days, and that includes today. I'm just really grateful for that, and there's no way I could ever repay the fellowship, but I thank you all very much for listening, and you know, if I didn't help anybody else, I really helped myself for this past 20 minutes or whatever, so thank you all.
I want to thank Graham one more time. Thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing. And our next speaker is Doug B. from Washington 1.
Hi, family. My name's Doug. I'm an Audi.
Hey, Doug.
It's 11 o'clock. I can remember clearly when I was half his age, and 11 o'clock, the party was just getting started. Now that I'm in my 50s, 11 o'clock is my bedtime, and so I won't be here long because I want to go to bed. And I wanted to thank my wife for coming down here with me. Graham, I do have a little advice for you on relationships. I met a woman I didn't deserve. I married her. And I'm learning how to say, yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear. As long as I learn how to say, yes, dear, my life is working well for me. I believe happy wife, happy life. And just for tonight, she's smiling. So it's going to be a good night. Thank you, dear. Yes, dear. And I wanted to say that my clean date is September 18th, 1998, which means that I have 11 years and 11 months, and at 12 o'clock I'll have 11 days. So I'm coming up on an anniversary, always excited about that. It's good to be down here at this retreat. We were looking at the stars, it's just beautiful out there. I still prefer sleeping in my own bed. I've never camped out in my life, don't intend to start now. But it's good to be here tonight. It's good to hear you share. What can I do? I was reflecting a lot, you know, here listening to you and preparing for being up here tonight. And well, I went to jail. I got cleared in a Washington County jail. I was introduced to this program through the legal system, through being suicidal. I'm on the way down here tonight on a turnpike. When we get off of that Somerset exit, I can look over the hill and see, you know, where that treatment center was that I went to down here. That's where I went to treatment. I'm from Washington. I'm from Houston, PA, but I went to treatment down here in Somerset, and I was glad that they had sent me so far from home for treatment, because I think had I been in treatment back home, I would have gotten pissed off and walked away. But I was down here long enough that the program got a hold of me. When I left treatment, I had worked all 13 steps, and I was never going to use again. And I was prepared to save the whole world. And I stayed clean for about 30 days, and then I used again. And then what had happened for me was when I was smoking, I didn't think that you could stop smoking. So I didn't really get this whole concept of suffering until after I got out of rehab and relapsed, or maybe not relapsed, I just started using again. But that's when my suffering really began, because I had gotten in touch with the fact that there were people that I had used with that weren't using anymore. And that was a real puzzle for me. When I was using, I didn't think you could stop using. But then once I was introduced to this program and I saw that some people had figured out how to stop using, that's when my suffering began, because I was still using and I didn't want to use and I couldn't stop using. And I went to jail a couple of more times. The last time I went to jail, as I said, was September 18th. And I always say this, that my clean date and my surrender date are not the same date. Because I remember clearly the day I went in, and I know that I have a clear memory of the day I went into jail, clear memory of the day I got out of jail. But I don't know what day it happened. But I know that I had been there for a while when I got down on my knees and I prayed and asked God to help me live my life without drugs. And that was my moment of surrender. And I know it was the scariest thing that I had ever done in my life. I know it was an unmistakable moment for me. Facing the thought of life without drugs just scared me. And I know I didn't see God. I didn't see Jesus. I didn't see a white light. The jail cell door did not pop open. But I know when I got up off my knees that my life was different. And I was going to a few meetings in jail. I mean, they had them. And I was going. I got a hold of a basic text in jail. One of the blessings for me in my life has been I just like to read. I like books. And so I was able to read a basic text cover to cover behind bars. So I got that sort of foundation before I got out. In the town where I lived in Washington, there's a lot of meetings. And so I didn't get too many meetings my first 90 days. When I got out of jail, I had 90 days clean. But my second 90 days, I was able to get to over 200 meetings. So you can go to a noon meeting every day in Washington, and then there's a meeting in the evenings as well. On a Saturday in Washington, if you time it right, you can walk to five different meetings. I've done it. 9 o'clock, 10:30, noon meeting, then there's a 7 o'clock and an 8:30 meeting. I like meetings, so I go to a lot of meetings. And I know that meetings don't keep me clean. I know that meetings are the fellowship, but I know that by building that foundation of going to meetings regularly, it meant that Narcotics Anonymous was my home, and the people there were my home. And if I don't get to meetings regularly, if I don't get to a couple of weeks still, I just don't feel comfortable. So I belong at meetings. I go because that's where I belong. And I know that my shot is improved by going to more meetings. I believe in the spiritual principle, the more meetings you go to, the more choices you get. The less meetings you go to, the less choices you get. If you ain't going to any meetings at all, sooner or later, you just run out of choices. And so I keep going to meetings, and I still am doing that today. I got introduced to prayer, like I said, when I came here, when I first got out of rehab, they had told me, if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. And I had heard that, and it made sense to me. Didn't know anything about prayer. My first prayers were, you know, God help me. My first prayers were, teach me how to pray. My first prayers were, what next? And when I first got out of jail and wanted to learn about prayer, I remember I started out by praying that God would help me sleep at night. And then I remember when I first started a regular prayer life that I had read a little line at the bottom of a Reader's Digest that said, if you don't believe in the power of prayer, you're not praying enough. That made sense to me. So I went from praying just at night to praying in the morning and asking God to help me get through the day. So I pray in the morning and I pray at night. And then I learned to pray over my meals. And then I learned to pray as I walked. And what I learned was the more I prayed, the more I sensed the conscious contact with the God that I understand. And I kept working that second step by reading about God in different literature, a lot of literature available, not just our literature, but literature from other faiths and from other programs, and reading as much as I could about God. Not that it helped me to know God better, but it helped me to develop a better relationship with the God that I understand by reading what other people understood about God. And by taking what I needed and leaving the rest, and by applying some of the things that I was reading about on a daily basis. And I kept doing that over the years. What can I do? Sponsorship. I remember that my first sponsor, he was somebody I had used with. In fact, I bought my first bag of pot off of this guy in 1970. It was this fat and cost $5. I don't know if it got me high or not, but I know pot was a lot different then than it is now. But when I got clean, he was clean. When I was at rehab, he was clean. And he was my sponsor even before I got out of rehab. So we would get together when I first got out of rehab, and we would talk about growing up, and we would tell war stories, and it would trigger me. And he would drop me off, and I'd go get high and blame him. Now, today I know that if I get high, it's nobody's fault but mine. But in those days, I didn't understand that. But when I got out of jail, and I was in counseling, the counselor asked me if I had a sponsor. I told him, yeah, but I don't like that son of a gun. Every time we talk, I get high. And the counselor said, well, Doug, you're doing well. He said, if you get a sponsor now while you're doing well and start to use him, later on, if you're not doing so well, you won't hesitate to use him. And that made sense to me. So I started going to meetings, and whenever they would bring up the topic of sponsorship, whenever they ask for a topic, I would always say, I'm Doug, I'm an addict, I want to hear about sponsorship. And I heard somebody say, if your sponsor's not the best sponsor in the world, get another sponsor. That clicked for me. And so I asked the guy who's my sponsor today if he would sponsor me. We've been working together ever since, 11 years now. I take my sponsorship wherever I can. On any given day, my wife might be sponsoring me. My best friend might be sponsoring me. One of my sponsees might be sponsoring me. My counselors, my friends, I just take guidance anywhere I can get it today. But I do have a sponsor. I remember the first guy that asked me to sponsor him. I might have had maybe 6 months clean. And the guy asked me to sponsor him. I got all excited. I said, look, I don't know if I can sponsor you or not. I said, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor until I talk to my sponsor. So I went and I called my sponsor. I said, some guy asked me to sponsor him. What do I do? And my sponsor said, well, do you have anything to offer him? And I said, well, yeah, I think so. And so my sponsor said, well, so go ahead and sponsor the guy. So I went back and I seen the guy and I said, I'm your sponsor. And he said, that's cool, lend me $10. And so I lent him $10 and I took him to a meeting. I swear up and down, I never seen the guy again. But I learned from that that I'm the guys I sponsor, I'm not a bank, I'm not a hotel, I have people stay with me. I'm not a bank or hotel or a taxi, but I will try to guide people through this process. I'll talk to people, try to make it comfortable, try to make it home. This is a program that saved my life. So I'm still sponsoring guys. Some of the guys I sponsored, I've had deep, deep relationships with. And some of those guys have become close friends to me. So sponsorship has been an important part of this journey for me. I continue to pray. I continue to go to meetings. I continue to work steps in my life. I've been working all of them since I got here. I hadn't worked a fourth and a fifth step. You know, I had about a year and a half clean, and I had gotten into a fight with someone. And I had called my sponsor up because it left me feeling so bad. And during the course of the conversation, my sponsor asked me if I had a part in what happened. And I said, oh yeah, I did. And my sponsor said, well, do you know what the 10 steps is? And I said, no, I don't. And my sponsor said, well, you've been going to meetings every day. You want to know what the 10th step said. And he told me the words of the 10th step. And he said, now do you know what you have to do? And I said, no, what do I have to do? And he said, you have to, if you were wrong, you have to admit it. And I remember thinking about, all day long, thinking about having to go tell this person, I was wrong, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have behaved the way I did. And I learned from that. It's a heck of a lot easier for me to admit that I'm wrong than for me to think about admitting that I'm wrong. And I've learned just to do it. And so I've been working a 10th step since early in the program. I've worked through the steps and go back and try to work whatever principle I need to apply to whatever situation's happening in my life. And I keep working the steps, keep trying to give back. I remember that one of the people who taught me about this program, when I met him, he had 16 years clean. And he said, Doug, after 16 years, there's one reason only, why I still go to meetings. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's to look for someone to help. And I just thought that was so profound. And then he got another year clean. And he said, Doug, he said, after 17 years, there's two reasons and two reasons only why I still go to meetings. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. That always stuck with me as well. But I keep coming back. I keep trying to reach out, keep trying to make the program comfortable for the newcomer, because I still believe that the newcomer is the most important person at any meeting. My wife and I were talking. Adam's falling asleep, and I was thanking Adam for saving us that comfortable seat on the couch, and we were talking about just being grateful. And I continue to try to practice gratitude and think regularly during my inventory about all the things that I have to be grateful for in my life. Because I was taught early in the program that an addict without gratitude will use again. And so I'm always counting my blessings. I'm always adding up all the things that I've got in my life that I don't deserve. I came in here broke, homeless, penniless, no God, no family. I didn't have much understanding of how to live. And I've been highly rewarded and blessed in this program. And so the more I practice gratitude, the more I have to be grateful for. And so I keep going back thinking about all the wonderful things that are happening in my life today. One of the things I'm trying to practice every day on a daily basis in order to maintain my serenity is I'm trying to learn how not to judge. I'm trying to let go of my criticisms, my judgments, my evaluations. My wife and I were at a meeting the other night, and after the meeting we were talking about it, and we had both had the same uncomfortable feeling of hearing a guy just spout. And what he spouted was probably inappropriate for our meetings. And in fact, he's asked me to sponsor him, although I'm not sure he has my phone number. He certainly never called. But I wanted to yell at him during the meeting, call your sponsor, because he was going off about stuff that probably I don't necessarily think was relevant. And he went on for a long, long time. But I know that what happens for me when I'm in that situation, is that first there's some intolerance, and first there's some thinking that, you know, I don't want to be here. My wife uses the term, just kill me. And there was some of that going on. But eventually I reached a stage where I'm able to practice some acceptance. And I know that the more I practice acceptance, the more I get serenity. And that guy's right where he's supposed to be. And it's not up to me to say that what he said was wrong. But I need to keep reminding myself of that. That's one of the ways I'm practicing about powerlessness today, is by letting people be where they're at. And I'm just trying to practice love, and trying to practice acceptance. And I wanted to close with this story. I just love to tell stories. And this is where I'm at today. I heard this a few months ago, and I've been sharing it ever since. But it was a story about a small town that had a monastery. Once upon a time, there was a small town, and in the town was a monastery. And the leader of the monastery was one of those people who was wise and loving and bright. And the people from the town would come and bring gifts, and they would get spiritual guidance and healing, and they would enjoy the fellowship at the monastery. And there was a beautiful relationship between the people, the monks at the town, and the monks at the monastery, and the people in the town. And then one sad day, the leader died. And as time went by, the new person in charge just couldn't hold the atmosphere. And conditions at the monastery began to deteriorate, and there was fighting, and the people from the town stopped coming, and there was less support, and so the monastery became poor, and there was strife. And one day, the man in charge realized that things were going to come to a close if he didn't find some solution. And so he had heard about a wise guru that lived up on the mountain. And so he went to the guru to ask for answers, to tell him about the problems, and ask for guidance. And the guru said to the man, he said, there's a monk living at your monastery who is the very incarnation of God, the embodiment of the divine and the sacred. He's disguising himself because of the strife at the monastery. But if you find him, he'll solve all your problems. And the guru refused to say another word. And so the man in charge walked home thinking about the advice that he had been given, and he began to think about all the monks that lived at the monastery, which one of them could have been God incarnate. He said it couldn't have been Brother Tim, because Brother Tim was always arguing with everybody. And it couldn't have been Brother George, because Brother George was a gardener. He said, took such poor care of the grounds. And he said it couldn't be Brother Dave, because Brother Dave was the maintenance man, and everything was falling apart. And as he went through the list of men that lived there, he eliminated everyone. He couldn't see how any of them could have possibly been divine. And as he approached the monastery again, he realized that if God really was living among them, then he must have been disguising himself because of all the strife. And so he went back and he told all the brothers what was going on, and they each began to examine each other. And they argued and fought about which one of them could have possibly been the reincarnation of God. And eventually they realized that the only way to solve the problem was to treat each one as if God dwelt within. And so as they began to look for God in each other, things at the monastery began to improve and began to go back to the way they had been before. And the monastery was once again filled with love and light and joy and peace and healing. And the community again began to come to visit with the brothers, because there was so much wonderful things going on at the monastery. And eventually, as things kept getting better and better, the head guy went back to the guru. And when the guru saw him coming, the guru greeted him and said, well, did you find God amongst your brothers?
And they answered them, yes, yes we did. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, we have a little bit of time, but anybody like to come up here and say anything? Once again, I'd like to thank Graham and Doug. I told Doug in his ear, like, thank you for letting God use him as a vessel, because, like, you know, Graham touched on not being okay, and I'm not okay. And this retreat is setting me at ease, and you touched everything I needed to hear. And I appreciate God keeping me open to hear the message, because I need everything that you had to say, especially about the 10 step. So, thank you both, and can we have just for today?
Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my recovery, on my new association, people who are not using, who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
That's a nice way of closing. Form a circle and close with the we version of the serenity prayer, please. I gotta wait for it.
Give me a hug.
I gotta wait for Grand Sun. I guess just next to Doug and underneath the gutter, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
Sorry.
I gotta go get Michael. He's down there planting all the kids.
Are you leaving right this second? Can you move myself, please? I'm gonna pee.
Up there?
Yeah.
That's why he didn't put one in his ear. I already signed one, too. So that's probably, if you don't have one for me in the morning.
Hey, can you get a retreat? Yes. Yeah. You want a good retreat? I'm tired, dude.